Hello everyone, and welcome again to the Associate and Affiliate Cricket Podcast. We have a fairly big show today. There's a number of previews to do, as well as a couple of reviews and some chat about the ICC's recent meeting. To join me to do that is a regular co-host, Andrew. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Russ. Hi, everybody.
Andrew, we did talk about it in the last episode. We had the interview with James Coyne, but Wisden was released. It's a fairly good issue from what I read of it. I think one thing James didn't mention was that it has reviews of all the one-day international nations, and they're actually well worth reading for where they're at. Your opinions on the content and some of the rewards of the year?
I sort of read the shorter Wisden and the e-book that they release. The editor's notes are always sort of a highlight. Obviously quite critical of the ICC's governance reforms. There's a good piece by Gideon Haig in there about it. The Cricket Around the World section, obviously, which covers most associate cricket, is as good as it always is. And then there's sort of individual bits, as you say, on Ireland, Scotland, the Netherlands, Canada, and a couple of other countries as well. That's sort of more lengthy pieces rather than the sort of short pieces that are in the Cricket Around the World section. All in all, it's a very good book. I have a bit of a quibble with the Cricketer of the Year choice. I was sort of quite confident that Ed Joyce would be named one of the five Cricketers of the Year. For those of you, those listeners who don't know, it's based on performances in the English season. It's supposed to be influence on the English season, not necessarily through English players. And one of the players who has been given it is Virat Kohli, who played just five ODIs in the Champions Trophy, which I don't think really is enough to have influence on the English season. But you've got someone like Ed Joyce, who I think scored 1,200 county championship runs at a pretty impressive average throughout the season. I think he probably deserved it. It would have been the first time an associate player had been named Cricketer of the Year without first having then England player, having played for their associate in the year in which they would have been named Cricketer of the Year. So very disappointing that Ed Joyce didn't play, but I suppose they gave you a mention, so they can't be all bad.
They did give me a mention, and I should acknowledge your contribution to that. Obviously, it was for talking about associate cricket, which is something the mainstream media still struggles with, and it's good that we've been acknowledged as providing that service and to push that forward in an August publication like Wisden.
Yes, very much so.
There was also an ICC meeting, and we can talk as well about Giles Clarke's article within Wisden, where he attempted to justify some of the changes that have been made. He talks about the one match at Lord's that England will play against an associate if they beat the 10th place team. I think it's only if they actually win. As a glittering prize, it doesn't sound, once you work out how much they're offering, it's not actually that glittering, is it?
Yeah, I described it as him saying, look everybody, shiny things. And it seems that people in associate cricket have been successfully distracted. The actual press release from the ICC doesn't actually mention anything about an associate that wins a test challenge getting test status, even for an interim period. I understand that's still to be decided whether that will happen. I assume at the ICC meeting in Melbourne, I think, in June, in your neck of the woods. But everybody is assuming that's what's happening because that's what's been mentioned in previous media releases. It wouldn't surprise me if they actually took it away. It also doesn't say exactly what they need to do to have won the test challenge. Do they have to win all four matches? Do they just have to win more matches than they lose? Do they have to, it's a home and away series, do they have to win the home series and the away series? There's very little substance in what's actually in that press release about the test challenge. And, you know, we're obviously cynical people when it comes to what the ICC say, I think with some justification as well. And is this just a carrot to get the associates to vote for the constitutional reforms. The constitutional reforms are one of the few things, I think the only thing actually that the associates actually get a vote on at the General Council at the annual conference. So is this just a carrot to try and distract them and get them to vote for the reforms that will in a year or so just be taken away? Maybe we are being a bit cynical, but you know, they've done similar things in the past.
Yeah, the problem, I guess, for me is that because all other fixtures are going to be held in place, which we've mentioned before, for whoever loses that test playoff, not that Zimbabwe and Bangladesh will most likely to have to play it, are getting a lot of fixtures, but even so, they've got their future tours program that's locked in place. It's locked in place for 10 years. So even if you win it, as an associate nation, you're not going to have that one opportunity that has been highlighted for England. There's almost no other gaps in the calendar to play other test nations, and it's really just a four game series, which will be particularly be interesting, and it may or may not have test status itself, but it's not sufficient to move cricket forward in terms of it. And we're basically in 10 years' time, we'll look back, I'm sure, and say, well, we've had a handful of matches of longer form cricket that are even fewer matches than we get of one day international cricket at the moment with similar types of reforms.
Yeah, you see the top associates scrambling around trying to get ODI fixtures. They were all guaranteed at least when they expanded ODI status. They were all guaranteed at least one match against a full member every year, and you know, some of them go years without having those matches. Obviously, Ireland have got the two ODIs against Sri Lanka, and Scotland have an ODI against England coming up. But you know, in terms of associates against full members, that's it for the rest of the year. You know, Ireland tried to get India to come and tour, but they were unsuccessful. Scotland haven't got either Sri Lanka or India to come. You know, Afghanistan, there's rumours that they might be playing, I think, Sri Lanka later this year, but there's nothing concrete there. And then for the UAE, Hong Kong and Papua New Guinea, absolutely nothing. UAE are reasonably well placed because they play host to Pakistan's home game, so you may get some ODIs against teams coming to play Pakistan and against Pakistan themselves. But aside from that, it's very quiet on the ODI front. And if you're struggling to fit ODIs in, then they're going to struggle to fit your five-day games in.
The other relatively important news out of the ICC meeting was that T20 qualifiers have been reduced to 14 teams. That might be an improvement at some level. It was a very long tournament, but it does raise an interesting question of how many places are going to be available for various regions, given that presumably seven are taken, the six plus Scotland. One from each region, there's really only a couple of spare spots for nations that would otherwise have been expecting to have it, particularly in the Americas and Africa.
Yeah, obviously disappointed that they've been reduced. Obviously, we should mention, as much as they talk about meritocracy in Test cricket, the teams that automatically qualify for the next World 2020 can only be full members. It'll be the top eight full members in the rankings who get into the Super 10 stage, and then the in Zimbabwe and Bangladesh who get automatically into the first round. Obviously, Netherlands doing so well in this year's tournament, and Ireland being ranked ninth in the world in 2020 cricket counts for basically nothing. So, you know, that's not really very meritocratic if you're going to use rankings for qualification, which, you know, I think we both agree you shouldn't. Then, you know, use them properly. Don't just say, oh, well, only certain teams can count towards those rankings when it comes to working out qualification. But, yeah, back to the actual qualifier. I'm not sure it will be a shorter tournament. So the dates I saw, the tournament was going to last about 4 weeks. So it seems to have been, there's more teams, and they've put it over a longer period of time, which seems very unusual. And, you know, it's co-hosted by Scotland and Ireland. I don't know whether they'll have one group in Ireland, one group in Scotland, or they'll start the tournament in Scotland and then move to Ireland. We don't really know that. We probably won't know until probably about 2 weeks before the tournament, knowing the ICC's record on this.
They may have put in a large reserve period for rain, which they may not feel was as necessary in the UAE.
Yeah, that's a good point. reserve days for rain in Scotland and Ireland are always wide. Maybe that's why they've reduced the number of teams as well, just to give them more reserve days. I don't know, maybe we're being too kind to them. You know, it hasn't been beyond the ICC to schedule World Cricket League tournaments in Malaysia in the rainy season. So, being that well prepared isn't really their sort of thing. Yeah, it's disappointing. I'm not sure exactly how the regional qualifiers are going to work. You'd have to think that everybody who we've already assumed is automatically eligible, which is the six qualifiers for this year's tournament plus Scotland as co-hosts, will be in the tournament. Because Division 2 tournaments have already been set, and Division 1 tournaments for next year have already been pretty much penciled in. So you can't imagine, I mean, you'd hope, you can't imagine the Netherlands and Ireland having to drop down into the European regional qualifier. That would be mostly unfair, especially on the Netherlands. Obviously, Ireland won't because they're hosting the tournament. But nothing is firm, I suppose. I know Vanuatu were hoping that perhaps Papua New Guinea would get an automatic place because they've got an ODI status now. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen, because that would mean that Vanuatu would be able to qualify from the East Asia Pacific tournament if Papua New Guinea didn't have to qualify from that tournament. It's a bit up in the air. And like with most of these things, they're not really telling anybody exactly how it's going on. I understand that the development committee will meet at the annual conference to decide how these places are allocated, and it'll be interesting to see exactly how they allocate them.
Yeah, I think based on past performances and so forth, if we assume there's at least one from every region, there's two extra places available. It would be a surprise if one of those wasn't the Americas, because they currently had three teams in the 16, and that would, if they didn't, it would mean both of Bermuda and USA would be struggling to get in, although you never know with the USA. It's various issues. And Africa obviously didn't have anyone in the top six, so it's looking quite difficult for Uganda, because presumably Africa will get two places for Namibia and Kenya, otherwise, again, we're going to see a side that's had a lot of good history at this tournament miss out on even getting to the quarter.
Yeah, and there's I suppose the other option, although time is probably against them doing this, it would be for all the regional runners-up to be put into a sort of repechage tournament for the final two places. But obviously with the European qualifier scheduled to be in sort of June, and then this qualifier scheduled to be in July, obviously you don't really have time to do that. And it'd be unfair to expect what could be end up being amateur players to be taking that much time off work for that amount of time. So that's probably out. Yeah, it's hopefully they'll decide it as quickly as possible so that everybody actually knows. You have the qualification process already started. We've already had Americas and Africa Division 3. So hopefully this will all be sorted pretty quickly, and hopefully we'll know as well, and not just decide it and then not announce it like they do most things.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past the ICC executive either to have decided that 16 teams was too many for the T20 qualifiers and reduced it to 14 without actually working out how they were going to do the qualifiers, which I kind of suspect might actually be what has happened as part of their cost-saving regime that's going on.
Yeah, some ICC executives probably can't even name 16 associate and affiliate members.
Yeah, the other non-news coming out of the ICC, Andrew, was that we still don't know about T20 status, and probably to some extent one day international status is a little bit up in the air as well.
Yeah, we were sort of under the impression that 2020 international status was going to be reviewed at this April meeting, possible look to extending it maybe to give Nepal and the Netherlands T20 I status until the next qualifier, but that decision seems to have not even been taken, and I even heard from one person that it wasn't even scheduled to be discussed, even though I'd heard from and two other people that it was scheduled to be discussed. So it's, you know, like many things, it's all up in the air. And if they have decided something, you know, they're not telling anybody.
Throw in a quick plug before we move on to the reviews. We often, on this podcast, have brought in information from the academic world about development and governance, and it's an important source of good practice that we like to talk about. There's a site being produced by the host of New Books in Sport, which is another podcast definitely worth reading, Bruce Berglund, called The All-Rounder, where they're bringing in a number of writers from all across the world, all across different sports. They've got a Kickstarter running. There'll be a link on my website to click to it. I highly recommend all the listeners here to have a look and maybe throw a few bob their way to encourage them to get this off the ground, because it's important, say, an important source of information. It's good to actually get it out of academic journals and into the mainstream public's awareness.
Joining us now on the Associate and Affiliate Cricket Podcast is Matt Featherston from the Brazilian Cricket Association. Thanks for coming on the show, Matt.
Thank you very much for having me.
You've recently been playing yourself with Brazil in the South American Championships. Brazil finished third in the men's tournament and were runners-up in the women's tournament. Would you have taken that result going into the tournament?
Definitely. I mean, with the women's tournament, that was a good result for the women ladies' side. Actually, for the men's side, this is probably the best men's side we had for quite a time. So we were unlucky. We missed out just by one wicket to make the final. And I think second place would have probably been a justified position for us, really.
Yeah, I mean, you started with a sort of a big defeat by Chile, and then had a, I suppose, a surprise defeat by Mexico, who went on to win the tournament. But you came back with a couple of good performances against Peru and Argentina A.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the first time Brazil have ever beaten Argentina in any form of tournament for the 14 years that I've been with Cricket Brazil. So that was a very pleasing result for us.
And you had a pretty decent performance with the bat in that match yourself, 66 from just 25 balls.
Yeah, no, I had a little bit of luck. Had a little bit of luck in that inning, but it was a great team effort to beat them for the first time. 14 years was great.
And the women's tournament as well, as you say, Brazil runners up. Just three teams participating in that. I understand the Brazilian women's team are nearly all sort of local girls, rather than expats that we sometimes see in these tournaments.
Absolutely, there's only Brazilians in the Brazilian national side. We've got a big squad of girls playing cricket here now. There's one expat girl playing cricket here in Brazil at the moment, and she doesn't make the full team. So it's great to see that there's 14 girls, Brazilian girls, representing Brazil in the women's national side.
And what about the men's team? How many locals are there in that team?
Depending, we have trouble obviously with financing for tournaments. So because of all the tournaments are financed by ourselves now, we're unfortunately not in a position to pick our best side, as are all the position of picking the side that is the best side that can afford to go. We unfortunately have dropped out of the ICC World Leagues as such, the Division 3, the Americas Division, that's been put on hold for the moment, or Division 4 that's put on hold. And now, obviously, all the tournaments are being paid for by the players, so we don't actually get the luxury of picking the best side that we can.
Yeah, that's one of the things I was going to ask you about. Obviously, Brazil, one of a number of teams, not just in the Americas, but in Europe and in Africa and East Asia Pacific as well, currently not taking part in the current cycle of tournaments. Are you aware of what Brazil have to do to be able to get back into sort of official ICC tournaments?
One of my roles is I'm the ICC Americas representative, so that's one of my roles. I know, trying to express to all the countries what to do and what we need to get in position for those countries in Brazil to get invited back into the tournament. A lot of work to fill in the boxes to make sure that we're available for the next possible ICC Division 3, America's Division 3 tournament.
I know you're quite hopeful that you will sort of tick all those boxes and get back into the next tournament.
Definitely, without a doubt, that's our aim. I understand fully the ICC's view of putting money rather than spending, because it's a big spend on tournaments, trying to make sure that we've got the development side growing, so that there is ICC tournaments from other countries. What was happening before is that a lot of countries, if you did cricket games per year, were still taking part in international cricket. Now the ICC have stated that there needs to be more league structure in each country before that country can then play international cricket. And that goes for both women and men's cricket.
And do you think sort of tournaments like this sort of fill a role that the ICC tournaments aren't currently filling? And would you sort of suggest that other countries, not just in the Americas but around the world, also try and do some of these little small tournaments?
Absolutely. We used to have a South American championship once every 2 years, which then interlinked with the ICC tournament. Now, because of now dropped out of the ICC tournaments for a while, we're doing the South American Championships every year. And as I say, it's not quite as good because you don't get the players with the ICC tournaments. Obviously, you're picking your best national team rather than the team that can afford to go. But I very much recommend that it's something worth doing, bilateral tournaments or small tournaments. Or South American championships are great, and they are filling the gap for the moment of our ICC needs.
You mentioned that you're the Americas representative for the affiliate nations in the Americas to the ICC. Can you just tell our listeners a little bit about what that involves?
Really, what that involves is reporting matters from the affiliates from the Americas regions. We've got 10 at the moment. In the affiliate region, and we had 11, and Cuba have just dropped out. So therefore, now my role really with them is to represent the 10 affiliates to the ICC. So if there's any complaints or any suggestions, that would normally go through me, and I can do that at various meetings with the ICC representatives.
And so how much, I'm not sure if influence is the right word, but how much influence do you actually have on the ICC or so are you, as you're the affiliate representative, are you sort of your bottom of the pile when it comes to having influence?
Not so much bottom of the pile. I think that the ICC respect all of the affiliate reps, five reps around the world, they were respected very well. I think the ICC had their own problems with the 10 full members, sometimes causing some problems, as we know at the moment, with India. And obviously the affiliates at the bottom of the pile, but if we come up with suggestions, then the suggestions are looked at properly.
And I suppose when you with all the news about the ICC's governance reforms, when you see full members making tens of millions of dollars a year described as being small cricket playing countries, you must think that's a little bit odd, but given how much money Brazil get from the ICC.
Yeah, it's a bit disheartening sometimes when you see the figures, what the full members get. Sometimes we're a little bit unhappy that there's, say, 107 members in the ICC, and maybe the 97 don't really get the looking that they should. But I think that could change, or not, as we're at the moment, governors. At the moment, with the three countries asking for more, who are we going to be next year?
What are the sort of main barriers to developing cricket within Brazil?
There are many things. One is it's not known. It's a sport that's not known at all. So we find one of the biggest problems we have is not having role models for children. As with many other sports, they will have a role model or can turn the television on and watch football, handball, basketball, volleyball, but not cricket. So that's a big difficulty we have. Also, the length of time that cricket takes. We play 20-20 now, which is great. And for anyone who's played cricket, for 50 over cricket or even 3 or 4 day cricket. I think that's a very short game, but still three and a half hours is still quite a lengthy time to keep people away from their families and etc. So that's a difficulty. I say the main difficulty is just being able to know what the game is, because as we all know, it's a great game. And the people that are taking it here in Brazil now are also finding what a great game it is.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things we talk about on the podcast a lot is whether cricket will ever sort of be in the Olympics. Obviously, Rio is hosting the 2016 Summer Olympics. If cricket was in those Olympics, what sort of support would you be getting from the Brazilian government?
Well, unfortunately, that would have been our dream to be in the Olympics this year, especially with the next Olympics in 2016. There would be considerable financial help from the Brazilian government. I have friends who are in the Rugby Association here, and obviously Rugby Sevens now being in the Olympics. Rugby has exploded in Brazil over the last 3 years, and will continue to do so now, building up and hopefully carry on so. But the financial support from the government would have been a significant sum.
And would you, I take it would pretty much dwarf what you get from the ICC, or?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we receive a minimum, I suppose, is not the right word to say, because we do receive a grant from the ICC in terms of cricketing with 201 million people in Brazil. We receive a very small from the ICC to build and grow cricket. And as I say, if we could have had a sum from the ICC or the IOC here in Brazil, it would have been very sizable.
I think that just about covers everything I wanted to ask you. Is there anything you'd want to say to our listeners about cricket in Brazil?
Just how that cricket's growing, really. We've got various projects here in Brazil now. We've actually got 11 projects going at the moment, which have over 150 children per week playing cricket. And now 550, I know, doesn't seem great numbers, but it's a real good start for us at the moment, and we're really starting to see the rewards of the work that's gone in from various development officers and people volunteering their time to teach cricket. And hopefully, who knows, cricket will keep growing, and we'll know a better spread the ICC tournament for 2 years.
Okay, well, thanks for coming on the show and speaking to us, and good luck for Brazilian cricket for the rest of the year and the future.
Yeah, cheers, Andrew, I appreciate it. We look forward to figuring out other things here in Brazil.
Okay, thank you very much.
Andrew, let's move on to reviews. The South American Championships were in Peru. They involved five teams: Brazil, Argentina, Chile. Peru obviously is the host, and Mexico, and in a men's and a women's tournament. The women's tournament had only Brazil, Argentina, and Peru. Chile topped the table, but were beaten by Mexico in the final. It was a little bit of an upset, I guess.
A bit of a surprise. I'm no geography expert, but Mexico isn't actually in South America. Last time I looked at a map. and they're also playing in the Central American Championship next month as well, which is where they should be. I don't know whether a South American team will end up winning the Central American Championship. Brazil a little lucky to miss out. They ended up finishing third in the table, but had the tiebreaker been net run rate, they would have finished second in the table and got to the final against Chile. Unfortunately, the sort of tiebreaker after the head-to-head record, which was level between Brazil, Peru and Mexico, the next tiebreaker was total wickets in the tournament rather than net run rate, and Brazil were one wicket short of equaling the number of wickets Mexico had taken, and had they been equal, then it would have been net run rate and Brazil would have got to the final. So I think Brazil can count themselves unlucky. Mexico winning, definitely an upset.
Yeah, it's good to see Chile doing reasonably well as well. I think they've probably flown under the radar a little bit with some of their development efforts, but they seem to be building a good base of players according to the statistics, so hopefully that's starting to come to fruition.
Yeah, Chile have always sort of been there or thereabouts, and hopefully they can sort of kick on now. Obviously, they're one of the teams not currently playing in official tournaments. All the teams in this event, apart from obviously Argentina, who's in the rear side, are out of official ICC tournaments at the moment. Hopefully, this can be a kickstarter to get them back into official ICC tournaments.
And Argentina as well. In the past, they've still won this tournament with their A side, but this time only one win. So, just good for those sides that they're managing to get one over Argentina, and hopefully we'll encourage them to start sending stronger sides in future tournaments.
Yeah, and I believe it was the first time Brazil had beaten Argentina for quite a number of years as well, and they sort of absolutely hammered them, won by 111 runs in their match. And so, yeah, good for the other sides, perhaps not so good for Argentina. Maybe the strength in depth isn't there as much as it has been in the past.
In the women's tournament, we're a little short on scores, but Argentina had beaten Brazil in the final. Peru struggled a little bit with the bat by the looks of things, a couple of really low scores.
Yeah, well, I think at one point they were bowled out for 19 by Brazil, so disappointed for them. But I think all three teams in this picked teams entirely made up of locals. Brazil, Argentina and Peru all did. You're not relying on the local expatriate community as you sometimes see in these sort of tournaments, which is good for the future and good in terms of development for the future.
Yeah, I think with the women's teams in these countries too, they've struggled to keep the players around long enough to develop them from one tournament to the next. So now that the South American Championships are every year, hopefully there'll be something for them to look forward to, and they can kind of get their women's teams to progress from year to year, and hopefully next year we'll be able to see them do better, because obviously a lot of them are pretty new to the sport, and it's just first steps.
Yeah, it's obviously playing it every year is going to help with that development, and hopefully they'll be able to keep some players together, a group of players together for a number of years, and progress from there. And I know the official ICC Americas Women's Championships is down to being, I think, just Canada, USA and Bermuda. Argentina and Brazil, I don't think, are taking part as they have done in the past, which is disappointing. But hopefully Argentina and Brazil, and maybe Peru eventually, can get into the sort of more formal ICC Americas tournament structure.
The Standard Gaia Trophy was also played during the last week, Andrew, between Malaysia and Singapore. It's a three-match series, 50-over tournament, and it's played in Malaysia. Malaysia came out on top in the first match, very high-scoring matches. They posted 282 for six. Singapore looked to be doing fairly well. They lost wickets, but they were at one point 253 for six, with still eight overs in hand to get the last 30 runs, but then collapsed to lose by 15 runs in the first match.
Faiz Nua scored a century for Malaysia as well. He's been in pretty good form, both internationally and domestically recently. Actually scored 115, pretty good innings from him. A close match in that first match, and it sort of was another close match in the second match as well, which was a little bit ruined by rain. High scoring match again. Malaysia scored 304 for five, and Singapore had to score 281 from 43 overs, and got remarkably close. Malaysia just winning by one run in the end.
Yeah, they needed 10 off that last over, and say just fell short. So probably a bit of a worry for Malaysia coming into the ACC Premier that's coming up, that their bowling struggled to contain you'd expect would be a relatively weak lineup. They also managed to lose the final game again. It was on Duckworth Lewis, but Malaysia had been bowled out for 190, and although the game was reduced, Singapore's target was revised down to 112 of 26 overs after they got to 74 for one in the 15th. So they kind of cruised into the final. And I guess from Singapore's perspective, even though they lost, it's actually a pretty good week given recent results before that.
Yeah, I think Singapore will next be playing in the ACC Elite Division, I think, which is the division below the Premier League. I think they'll sort of go into that with some confidence. You know, the two games they lost were quite close, and then they won one quite convincingly. Whereas Malaysia, perhaps not too much confidence going into the ACC Premier League.
Yeah, and of course both teams will play in Division 4 in Singapore in June as well, so it's a match-up we're going to see probably three or four times in the next a year or so.
They play a lot, which I suppose is a good thing. You know, playing your local rivals a lot, it does help. But you know, as long as you don't get too overly familiar with you, if you're playing the same team again and again and again, you're not going to get much variety, which sort of can be detrimental. But you know, it's good to see that these matches outside of the official ICC sanctioned tournaments, you know, the South American Championship is one of these as well, that these events still take place.
In news, there's only a couple of bits of news apart from the ICC stuff going around, but Hong Kong, we had mentioned that they were going to probably struggle to find a one-day international standard ground in Hong Kong, but it appears that the Mission Road ground is just big enough for them to be able to use for their home matches when they eventually get around to playing the next World Cricket League Championship.
Yeah, that's sort of extremely good news for Hong Kong. They were talking about having to play their games in China at the stadium that was used for the last Asian Games. But yeah, I think they just need to develop some of the facilities for players and umpires a little up to a higher standard, and then it looks like they'll be able to get approval to host ODIs at the ground, which, very important for Hong Kong. It's always better to play your matches at home wherever possible. You know, nobody wants to be sort of on the road for every match.
Yeah, I think it'd still be good if they did win and go across to China at least once or twice to take advantage of that opportunity to develop their new neighbours and interest in the game over there. They're obviously also looking to get funding from the Hong Kong government to actually develop a ground that had been promised and has been lagging for a number of years. So, again, having one-day international status will definitely help on that front, you'd think.
Yeah, you'd certainly hope so.
The other piece of news, Osaka and the ACF's battle, which is likely to come to a head in June at the ICC meeting, annual meeting, they've been asked in preparation for that to provide written submissions from their member leagues certifying that they are actually a member of one of those two organisations, which we'd assume means that if there's a number of submissions saying that the ACF is the member organisation for US cricket, that will be sufficient for the USACA to have the police explain at that meeting.
Yeah, it looks like the writing could well be on the wall for USACA. There's a couple of leagues that currently actually are members of both organisations, mostly to keep their players still eligible for selection for the US national team. But with the US national team not got any formal matches this year, you can perhaps look at whether these leagues will finally make a decision and completely switch to the ACF rather than sort of playing both sides as they are at the moment. And if enough leagues do say that the ACF and are their governing body, and I think probably more leagues now are members of the ACF than are members of USACA, I think it can only lead to USACA's suspension. But you know, USACA have managed to dig themselves out of plenty of holes in the past, and they're not beyond digging themselves out of another hole here. And hopefully this will be the final nail in the coffin for USACA, but maybe they'll live to fight another day.
Yeah, they've got till November, I guess, to the ICC to make a decision or work out what they're going to do with regard to the USA playing, because that's mooted as the time when the World Cricket League Division 3 is. That's not a huge, it's not a massive amount of time since they'll need to start preparing by probably September. It's really only a 3-month break between that June meeting and when they'll have to have made a firm decision on whether the USA is able to play in that tournament.
Yeah, decisions on suspensions are usually made at annual conferences. So if a decision is going to be made, I think it'll be this June. And you'd assume that the sanction would be automatic relegation by a couple of divisions in the World Cricket League, possibly even sort of right out of the structure as well. Because if USACA can't even continue as a single governing body, then surely their ICC membership would be revoked and the ACF would perhaps start again from the beginning as an affiliate member.
Yeah, it might make that third, fourth play at the World Cricket League Division 4 a little bit more interesting too, because you never know. It might be a ticket to Nepal.
Yeah, obviously a little bit more to play for in that World League Division 4. And we'll see what happens. Hopefully a decision will be made pretty quickly and we can... US cricket can sort of move on from there.
Several more tournaments coming up, Andrew. The first of those will be Europe's Division 3 tournament. It'll be played in Spain from the 30th of April to May 3rd. It's quite a short tournament because they've obviously reduced the number of teams. In Division 3 they haven't, but in the other divisions they have. And so there'll be... 5 teams competing in this tournament: Spain, Belgium, Israel, Finland, and Hellas, which is Greece. The good word is that Belgium, probably partly because it's a surprise that they got relegated to Division 3 in the first place, but also because they've got Brighton with Matamua as their captain, they are pretty clear favourites, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, they're already sort of pretty much favourites even before they announced that Watambo was in the squad. For those who don't know, he played, I think, about half a dozen tests for Zimbabwe about 10 years ago before he emigrated initially to the US and then now to Belgium. I think he's been settled there now for about 5 years. He has previously played for Belgium in one of the unofficial Continental 2020s that he's played at Schiedam in the Netherlands. But this is his first sort of official international engagement for Belgium. Apparently still a pretty lively bowler and you could be pretty dangerous on the artificial wickets that they have at La Manga in Spain. You'd have to make them pretty much odds-on favourites, I suppose. Israel have maybe a chance of causing the upset. We'll probably know... Israel and Belgium are set to play on the first morning of the tournament, and you'd expect that match to maybe decide the tournament. Spain playing at home, you can't rule them out, but yeah, I think Belgium pretty much odds on favourites and can probably already start booking their trip to Division 2 later this year.
Following very shortly after, the next day in fact, there's quite a big tournament involved with a number of one-day international matches because of the teams involved, which is the ACC Premier in Malaysia. Again, Afghanistan, Malaysia, Hong Kong, Nepal, Oman and the UAE are all involved in this tournament. Normally you'd put Afghanistan as the favourites, but their recent form isn't fantastic. And you'd expect UAE, Nepal and Hong Kong to all fancy themselves to knock them off if they can do well.
Yeah, and Afghanistan have actually named... a weakened squad, still got a few sort of top players in there, but no Mohamed Nabi, no Hamid Hassan. So it's an interesting Afghanistan squad. They seem to have a habit of naming weakened squads for ACC tournaments, which I don't think they should be doing. They need to be winning regional events if they're to... sort of impress the people who are watching these sort of things, who make decisions at the ICC.
Well, in this case particularly, because these are one-day international matches, this will affect their ranking.
Yeah, yeah,
and
exactly.
They can't afford to be dropping in the rankings. In fact, if they don't win I think, what is it, 66% of matches, they won't have a ranking in the one-day international. So that's certainly something they should be aiming for.
Yeah, and you know, obviously the games, their games against Hong Kong and the UAE will be ODIs, as will the match between Hong Kong and the UAE. And one of those ODIs is at the Bumrah Sobel Oval in Malaysia, which will become, I think, the 192nd ODI ground. So obviously, that's recently been approved to host ODIs. And, yeah, it's a big tournament for Afghanistan, I think. I think they've been very foolish in naming that weekend squad. The other teams are all picking pretty much full-strength size. I've not seen the Oman squad yet, but all the others have certainly picked full-strength sides. Yeah, and you very well could see, you know, Hong Kong or the UAE come through to win it. Nepal struggled in the last 50-odd tournament they played, which was the World Cup qualifier, but they always do a lot better in Asian conditions, so you know, you'd back them to be there or thereabouts at the end. And you know, Malaysia playing at home, so they didn't have too good a stand a Gaia trophy, but you can never rule out the home team. Oman, I can't see doing particularly well. If I was to put money on a team being relegated, it would be Oman. But yeah, it'll be an interesting tournament. It's, again, you know, it's good to see a regional 50-over tournament. You know, there's not many of them. I think they've all been in Asia for the last 4 years. And yeah, it's good to see them.
Yeah, obviously against the other sides of Oman and Malaysia, will just be hoping for an upset as much as anything. But it, as you say, there's a relegation place presumably at play, and their match will be particularly important in deciding that. It's on the first day again, which is will make it interesting.
Yeah, I think it'll be a pretty interesting tournament that will give us a good idea of where things stand in Asia. Obviously, they've reduced the number of teams playing in. Well, they reduced the increased number of divisions, so they're hoping to avoid as many mismatches as they've had in the past, and maybe this will give us a better idea of the strength of the teams.
Final tournament starting soon. It's on the 7th. Starts on the 7th of May. It's the East Asia Pacific Women's Tournament in Japan. Again, there's six teams involved, but only five of them are part of the East Asia Pacific as nations. It's Samoa and the Cook Islands, Japan, Vanuatu, PNG, and a Cricket Without Borders representative side from Australia who can fill in for numbers. Japan's defending champions of this tournament. You'd expect PNG to challenge them fairly closely?
Yeah, I think the tournament is between Japan and Papua New Guinea, no disrespect to Samoa, Vanuatu, or the Cook Islands. You'd expect one of those two top teams to win the tournament. Japan playing at home, as you say, you'd probably make them just favourites. But Papua New Guinea, they have some decent players. They're getting, obviously now they've got ODI status in men's cricket, they're getting more funding, which they'll no doubt be putting some of that towards women's cricket. You'd hope they'd be putting some of it towards women's cricket. And yeah, maybe they can perhaps cause a bit of a surprise and put one over in Japan.
And finally, there's a couple of fairly significant matches between Ireland and Sri Lanka on the 6th and 8th of May in Ireland, and Scotland and England on the 9th of May. The Sri Lanka Ireland matches will be live streamed on Air TV as well as through the Cricket Ireland site, and which will be good for fans of Irish cricket all over the world that they'll be able to watch it.
Yeah, obviously always good to have live streaming of matches. Interesting to see what it's a new company to doing this. They did a little bit of the inter-provincial championship last year, this company, so I think this will be the first international event they've done. It'll be interesting to see what the quality of their broadcast is like. Sri Lanka have named a slightly weakened side for these two matches. And there's no Lassith Malinga, a couple other players are missing as well. So Ireland will be, I think, confident they can perhaps at least tie the series, if not win it.
Yeah, Sri Lanka, I'm not sure they've played, or how much they will have played since the World 2020 either. Some of the players presumably are coming off the IPL as well. So they, in quite different conditions to the UAE, those or Bangladesh. So certainly a chance for Ireland to get that elusive win that they couldn't get last year, despite being very, very close to it on a couple of occasions.
Yeah, it'll certainly be a lot colder than the UAE in sort of early May in Ireland. And speaking of somewhere where it will be cold, Aberdeen on the 9th of May for Scotland against England, that will be cold. So.
Yeah, I haven't seen this English squad yet. It probably hasn't been announced, but hopefully it's a reasonably decent strength side that they put up there, having not quite done that with some of the Irish games recently.
Yeah, I think with this being at the start of the season, perhaps they'll want to just give everybody a run out and get them sort of in form ahead of the Sri Lanka series that they have. You know, it'd be hopefully the match will sort of, as you know, we are joking about to some extent about the cold weather in Aberdeen, but the weather in Aberdeen at the beginning of May isn't the best. But hopefully they'll get a full game in. It's being shown on Sky Sports here in the UK, and I'm not sure about television coverage elsewhere. But hopefully some people will be able to watch it. It'll be an interesting game. Obviously Scotland playing in the World Cup next year. Look to have a decent run out. I think it's the only game against a full member they've got before that World Cup. So, you're a chance to impress people. You've got Cal Kurtzer back. Obviously, he missed some of the World Cup qualifier through injury. And, yeah, hopefully be able to put on a decent display and perhaps surprise England, who haven't been in the best of form recently.
Yeah, look out for a very confused Paul Collingwood, who's been involved in both sides within the last couple of months. So, not sure which side of the fence he'll end up on in this match.
Yeah, well, maybe he wants to switch back to a winning side after spending a bit of time with England.
That's all I have, Andrew. Thank you.
Thank you, as always.